The Orlando Magic are one of the most promising teams in the league, but the path is not always straight. Today on Locked On Magic, we get a national perspective. What up, everyone? It's time for Locked On Magic.
You are Locked On Magic, your daily Orlando Magic podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And you are indeed Locked On Magic. Today is, or will be, May 11th, 2023. I don't know when I'm going to post this. My name is Philip Rossmann-Reich. I'm the expert and site editor over at OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Of course, follow me on Twitter at PhilipRR_OMD. On today's episode of Locked On Magic, we're going to talk about the Orlando Magic season that was and what lies in store in the future with GQ Sports' Howard Beck, Locked On contributor as well. We're going to talk to the great Howard Beck here in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you again for making Locked On Magic part of your day every day, no matter when you listen to us, whether it's first thing in the morning, whether it's right when we upload. We truly appreciate you making Locked On Magic part of your day every day. Remember, there's a great Locked On podcast covering every single team in the NBA. To search for Locked On and the team you're looking for, the Locked On Podcast Network, it's your team every day. Now on to a great conversation I had with Howard Beck. And we are now joined by longtime NBA writer, contributor at GQ Sports, as well as here on the Locked On Network. You can see him on a bunch of Locked On podcasts around the network. So pick your team and you'll probably be able to find his thoughts on them. It's Howard Beck. I promised myself I wouldn't say this, but I can't pass it up. What up, Beck?
What up, Phil? Thanks for the kind introduction. Appreciate that. I don't want to discourage your listeners from listening to all the other guest spots I've done throughout the network. I do think there's an overexposure fear I have there. So I'm just going to say, like, you know, budget it. Don't not too much of me. I hear too much of myself at this stage. I don't want to wish that on the listeners, but I appreciate it. It's been fun making the rounds with all the teams, and everybody on the network does such a phenomenal job. So eager to jump in today.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you know, we're sitting here, you know, I don't know when everyone's going to be listening to this. We're sitting here in early May. We're a week out from the lottery. And so, you know, I definitely want to try and get a little bit more of a national perspective from you about the Magic. You know, we're here in Orlando, just kind of in the mud. And I guess the place to start is what, you know, looking from afar or kind of digging back into this team, what were your overall impressions of the Magic's 2022-2023 season? It was obviously, you know, for a young team, one of growth, but, you know, expectedly not a playoff berth.
Yeah. And look, there are various versions of a missing the playoffs team, right? There's the miss the playoffs and it's a devastating blow for some teams. There's miss the playoffs, but you were that close and you're on the rise and, you know, breakthrough is coming, right? And then there's like the Magic. And the Magic, on some level, I don't want to compare them directly to the Thunder because I think the Thunder are further along in a lot of different ways. The Thunder are really knocking on the door. But in both cases, you have teams that have been down that had surprisingly competitive seasons. And in the Magic's case, you know, certainly for certain stretches of the season, you started to see that glimmer that you've been waiting for a while. I also think that, look, Bancaro was the number one pick, but there was a serious debate right up until draft day. And I think depending on which team had gotten the number one pick, it could have gone a different direction. And I think there were some doubts like, well, Bancaro, he seems really solid. He's going to come in ready to contribute, but is he a franchise star? Is he a foundational piece? Or is he just a really good player who's got some polish and an NBA ready body and all that? And I think there were some legitimate, I don't want to say doubts, but just like questions about what kind of player he could be, especially on day one. And, you know, obviously he's rookie of the year. Obviously there are some, you know, some holes and gaps in his game, which we can talk about, but I mean, I think he met or exceeded expectations. And I know that's a weird thing to say, like your number one overall pick, you're supposed to be rookie of the year. You're supposed to be the best rookie. You're supposed to have the best stats, all that stuff. Sure. But it doesn't always work out that way. And some guys, the learning curve is steeper. I think Bancaro really impressed. I think that, you know, Wagner making the steps that he did. I think that, you know, Wendell Carter Jr. continuing to round into form. Like, people look at the outline of this team and say, like, okay, I don't, you know, they're not there yet, but there's at least something to build around, which is not something you could say for the last however many years, right?
And there been were a while.
It's been a while, but also like there were kind of fake versions of it too, right? Like I was never sold on the Aaron Gordon, Vooch and company grouping, right? Like I never saw like it was so clear. Even when they were like the years where they flirted with the eighth seed, or the years that they even actually made the eighth seed or whatever, those teams never looked like they had more runway. It just felt like they were spinning their wheels to me. And this is the first time maybe since Dwight, and I have not gone to look year by year by year, you would know better than I would living this, but I feel like this is the first time since Dwight left that there is actually some promise and some upside, and that is clear, and that has more runway, right? And it's, this is not to say that Vooch wasn't a good player or Aaron Gordon wasn't a good player. They have had some other players who were, you know, solid contributors, but just nobody you said, all right, that's the guy we can build around, or those are the two guys who can be our foundation and who have enough upside that we can expect to make serious advancements. All that said, like, you know, as they stand now, and you know, we're talking in early May, right? The lottery hasn't even happened yet. There'll be a lot to happen between now and opening night in October. As they stand now, and in an Eastern Conference that's pretty solid these days, like, do I think that next year is the year that they make the leap into the playoffs? No, probably not. But as I say, it's a very premature statement.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot to go. I'll circle back to that a little bit later. But you know, to that point, like those Vucevic Gordon teams, that kind of the Rob Hennigan era of the rebuild. I agree, just kind of lacked that direction. And even when Steve Clifford came in and got this team back to the playoffs in 2019 and 2020, it just felt like this group had a ceiling. And I remember sitting back in those days, and after the 2019 playoff run, I think we were all saying, like, Aaron Gordon needs to take the leap. You know, whatever he's supposed to be, whatever the best version of him needs to be, if he's going to be an all-star, it's got to happen in 2020, or this thing's spinning its wheels. You know, that group was a more veteran group that finally made the playoffs. And I think this franchise is very thankful to have made the playoffs after so long at just being completely irrelevant. But to make the playoffs was a good thing, but we all kind of saw the expiration date. And obviously Jeff Weltman finally kind of hit the reset button a couple years after that, when injuries finally just kind of had them bottoming out and the opportunity came along. To that point then, you know, Paolo Banchero seems like the real deal. I mean, I think a lot of us who watched his first game against Detroit back in October, like, we were all stunned at how easily it seemed like he was able to exist and occupy an NBA court. And obviously he had the strong opening start to this opening of the season, had his rookie failings, especially with his outside shooting. But now that the rookie year is behind him, and obviously there's a lot of areas that he can grow, where does Paolo potentially fit into the kind of star ecosystem of the league, and how important is that next part of the development to this team's overall development?
I mean, I think it's critical, obviously. He's the guy who should be their best player now and for the next however many years, right? Like, this is the guy you're trying to build around. Now, listen, if you come into somebody else, whether through the draft or maybe in free agency trade, like, you know, there's always the possibility. But I think you go into this offseason feeling like, all right, we have the guy that we think can be our North Star. What his ultimate ceiling may be is unknown, right? And I always try to be very cautious about projecting with young players, whether it's straight out of the draft or even after their rookie season. There's so many variables, even for the best talents that come into the league, that have to do with your own work ethic, your motor and your drive, your supporting cast, the organization you're with, the coaches that you're working with, your ability to stay healthy. There's a bazillion influences. And so I always try to preach caution with these things, you know, and there are some guys who you can see that ceiling is higher than others based on certain just athletic abilities, or, you know, they're an ace shooter on day one, or they're a great playmaker on day one. They just got to learn to play NBA defense, and they got to learn how to be more part of a system, those kinds of things. But there's just so much that goes into it. All that said, look, the outline is there. The outline is there of a guy who can be a perennial all-star. And if you talk to people around the league, you know, that's where they view him as, like, this is somebody who, you know, should become an all-star caliber player. Nothing guaranteed, but there's some obvious areas that he needs to improve. The outside shot, which you mentioned, is a very clear one, especially in today's NBA. But just, you know, learning NBA defense and being, you know, he's got the physical tools to be able to guard multiple positions, and switching defense is such a staple of today's NBA that you've got to be really solid and able to apply yourself across the board there, across multiple positions. And then if you want to be a number one option in this league and you want to do so in a way that's not going to limit your team's ultimate upside, you've got to become a really good, smart playmaker too. And a selfless playmaker. And I think he, you know, look, that was one thing that I felt like he had as a real great asset coming in. And I think rare for, you know, for a non-point guard to come in as a rookie and to come in essentially as a primary scorer.
And the double teams he faced. Like,
yeah.
By January, he was facing double teams and beating double teams that, like, you don't see rookies face.
Which is, you know, one, very, you know, very speaks well of him that he could handle that or could adapt and evolve on the fly there. But two, like, I think he came in as a pretty good passer. Like, I remember even in summer league, that was one of the first things I noticed was, oh, wow, he's not a guy who's just going to, you know, bull rush the rim every time or take, like, he's got some good passing instincts. And so, you know, averaging what, 3.7 assists as a rookie. Again, as a non-point, if you have drafted as a point guard, I expect the numbers to be there.
Yeah, he's still like third among rookies in assists or something like that.
And also, like, look, this is not a knock on any of these guys, but, like, over the years, guys come in who are skilled scorers, drafted by bad teams, which just tends to be the case at the top of the lottery. You've got all the license in the world to just, like, fire away. And that's obviously not always a good thing for you or your team. But to be able to then be judicious about it and read double teams and make plays, I just think speaks very well of where his career should be headed.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I thought his passing was better than what he showed at Duke, but, like, to your point, like, even in summer league, I was just like, oh, this guy can do a lot more than what he showed us in college, and you know, certainly. Certainly, that's kind of the trick is finding that, because you got to deal with team context in college. Let's take a quick break so I can say a few words from our friends at eBay Motors. For a championship team, it's all about making sure every player is a perfect fit. It's the same when it comes to your vehicle. Every part needs to fit just right. So the next time you need parts and accessories, head to eBay Motors. With eBay Guaranteed Fit, you can be sure every part you need fits right the first time around. Just add your ride to My Garage and look for the green check to know the part will fit or your money back. Because just like in sports, confidence is the name of the game when you shop on eBay Motors. And with more than 122 million parts to choose from, you'll be back in the game in no time. After all, it's easy to bring home a win when the right parts are guaranteed. Get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices on ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. eBay Guaranteed Fit, only available to U.S. customers. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. His running mate in Franz Wagner always seems to be just, like, very under the radar. Like, all the basketball nerds love him, and they know about him, and they tell us how great Franz, you know, we Magic fans know how great Franz is. But what does, you know, what do you see in Franz Wagner? Where does he fit into this team and with this team's future? And you know, can he be someone that doesn't just fly under the radar? Can he be an all-star in his own right?
I think to the extent that he flies under the radar, it's because the Magic are a small market team that don't win a lot, right? Like, if Franz Wagner were doing all the exact same things as a member of, you know, the Sixers, the Lakers, the Warriors, the Celtics, we would talk about him differently. Everybody raving about him. So it's not a knock on Franz Wagner. It's just that in this league, if you play in a small market, especially on a small market team that's, you know, winning 20 something games or 30, you know, whatever, you're just not going to get a lot of acclaim. So yes, it's the basketball nerds, the basketball intelligentsia who are going to rave and appreciate his game. The rest of the world will catch on eventually, but it will probably require them to actually win more and make the playoffs. That's just kind of the natural order of things. In terms of like his place in the Magic ecosystem, you know, any given night. So first of all, let me start with this. We are obviously in an age where having guys who are in that 6'8", 6'9", 6'10" range who can be interchangeable and do a lot of things with the ball in your hands, shoot, you know, score from distance, you know, score inside, get to the rim, pass, defend, rebound. Like, that's the sweet spot for NBA builds these days, right? Not everybody's going to turn into, you know, Kevin Durant or Giannis or Luka or whatever, but a guy who's got size, height, and can be a primary, not just primary scorer, but a primary playmaker, a hub of your offense, because he can do, he's highly skilled, is the sweet spot. And even like, you know, look at, you know, Jaylen Brown's, I think, closer to like 6'6", but like Jaylen Brown at 6'6", and Tatum at whatever, 6'8", 6'9", like, and this is a bad time to be citing them as a model while they're gagging away a playoff series, but I've always liked the outline ever since those two got together. I've liked the outline of what the Celtics were building there, because I think in today's NBA, having guys who can do multiple things and who are long and switchable, it matters. Like, it's a really good way to build, because it gives you a lot of flexibility and versatility. And I like the fact that as the Magic try to, you know, climb out of this, you know, deep hole they've been in for so long, that the two guys they're building around are in that kind of modern day NBA mold. Tall, long dudes who can shoot, handle, pass, rebound a little, defend a little, like, and are young enough to keep improving in all of those areas. You presume that Banchero is kind of the number one, and Wagner is the co-star. I don't think that really matters. Who cares? Like, you know, for this team to win offenses, at a high level.
Offenses are so fluid these days anyway.
They are.
It's a lot more like, it's not like the coach is calling a play and you run a set. It's, let's set up this scenario. You read the defense and make something happen. Because, you know, as this is my theory, at least, just to go on a tangent, the NBA defenses have never been better than they are now. And so offenses, you know, obviously have adjusted with 3-point shooting, but they've adjusted by just being a little bit more random and a little bit less predictable, more read based and less set based, which I think was yes, maybe what it was like in the triangle was revolutionary because it was read based. It wasn't set based. And so now, like, Tom Thibodeau came in, did, you know, that everyone went to that strong side zone kind of principles that he had. And now everyone's just like, the way we beat that is the defense can't predict where we're going to be.
Yeah. And so having multiple guys who can do something with the ball in their hands is a plus, which leads me to my own quick tangent, which is, I think it was Mike D'Antoni was the first one who basically said something along the lines of, this is during his Phoenix Suns days, where he was like, just give me five guys who can all, you know, dribble, pass, and shoot. Like, easier said than done. But have the more skilled guys you have, and especially to me, the more playmakers you have in your lineup, the better off you are, because defenses will take away, you know, or try to make it very difficult for your best scoring options. And so having multiple guys who can do something with the ball in their hands and who are all, you know, quick decision makers and ball movers, that's what keeps the defense off balance. That's what the Warriors do at their best, right? You don't know where it's going. Like, yeah, you know, Steph's the guy you never want to leave and always keep an eye on, but because he doesn't dominate the ball, you can't predict where he's going next, because he's going to give it up and then run through a bunch of screens and get it back, and then, you know, give it up and get it back again. I'm not suggesting that, you know, anybody else can do that. It's hard. But the unpredictability matters. Having multiple playmakers matters. So again, if I'm talking about some platonic ideal of a foundation, I like the fact that the guys that the Magic are now building around are two guys who I think, you know, on some level, not saying they'll both be elite in all facets, but can do multiple things with the ball in their hands, because it's going to be able to make both of them more effective by having the other guy as a relief valve.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's all really, really good point. You know, especially because as this team starts to think about kind of the bigger picture stuff, you know, they feel like they have those foundations in with Paolo and Franz. They have a bunch of like really nice, interesting young guys, you know, Wendell Carter, Markelle Fultz, Jalen Suggs, Cole Anthony. This is still a team that's coming together. And I think what kind of the next phase, the next level that Jamal Mosley keeps talking about this team needs to reach, the next level is, how does this all work, you know, when you're focused on winning, when you're focused on making the playoffs? Because that is a different animal. If this season was about learning how to win at a very base level, which, you know, going from 22 to 30 to 34 wins is a good jump. But I remember we were talking with Scott Skiles in the lone season that he coached the Magic when the Magic went from 25 to 35 wins. I remember asking him, like, you know, yes, you know, they started 19-13, kind of fell apart that year, made some very bad trades that put them even deeper in a hole. But I remember asking him, like, at the end of the day, team improved by 10 wins. Do you view that as success? And I remember this very vividly. Skiles said, you know, going from 25 to 35 wins is easy. Going from 35 to 45 wins is much more difficult.
Yeah.
What does this Magic team have to do then to make that next 10 win leap? And you said, yeah, you probably don't expect them to be a playoff team. I don't know if that means playoff team or postseason team, since there might be a distinction between those two now, but yeah. What does this team have to do to make that leap into postseason contention next year, into serious postseason contention next year? Cause they were hovering around three games out the whole year and couldn't make up any ground after they made their run in December.
Yeah. And look, you know, the teams ahead of them will have, you know, changes too. So you don't want to assume too much again here in early May, but like, even just looking at the standings as they, you know, ended the season, there are 7 wins behind the 10th place team, behind the last play-in team, which was Toronto. Excuse me. I take that back. These stupid play-in standings will mess with me every time. And the whole fact that Miami went from 7th best team to
they ended 6 games back of Chicago.
Yeah.
Chicago or Toronto, I forget which one now. Yeah. Not that it matters anymore. They ended 6 games back of Chicago, I think was 10. Of course, they were 3 games back, and then they just decided to tank their final 3 games after they
were
eliminated.
And that influences it too, yeah, right? So yeah, we should, it, all that perspective matters. But the fact is, you shouldn't be counting like, oh, how many games will it take to get to the 10th spot? Like, that's not the game. So they still have some ground to make up. For an Eastern Conference that's gotten deeper, and where everybody's competitive, and because the trend lines the last couple of years is that the NBA just keeps getting, you know, more and more competitive balance, in part because of the allure or the incentive of the play-in, and so it makes it really crowded in that range of the standings, right? And you look at the teams ahead of them. I don't know what the hell Washington's going to do. Like, they have a new front office coming in at some point soon. They got guys to resign. They got to make a decision on Beal again. Are they going to trade him? Can they even trade him? The Pacers are a team that's on the upswing, right? They've got a good young core. They will keep building. I don't know which direction the Raptors are going, but they seem determined to keep, like, they're not tearing down, clearly. And I expect they'll be better. And the Bulls seem content to keep hovering in that 7-8-9 zone. The Hawks have talent. They just underachieve. The Heat have talent, but they underachieved up until they'd gotten to the playoffs, and now they're overachieving. Weird how that works. Miami's weird. So the point being, like, I don't think any of those teams are going anywhere. So if you're going to break through the clutter, you got to make some really big moves or some major advances with the guys that you have. I don't see too many. I don't see really any candidates ahead of them other than maybe Washington, who are, you know, potentially going to drop behind them immediately. So they, you know, the Magic have now some pieces, but the depth isn't there. They need a starting point guard, in my view. And that would take a lot of pressure off their two young emerging possible stars, if we want to call them that right now. And you know, I was talking to somebody with another team earlier in the week, and that was basically it. He's like, they need a point guard, but I don't see them making that a priority this offseason. Like, they're not quite ready yet to go all in and say, okay, now's the time to pivot to building up and spending. That's a team that, you know, is perceived around the league as not being one that wants to spend big anyway, that they've got some limitations. And when you start making all in moves, obviously it also raises the bar for you know, expectations of the results. So if your team is too young and you start trying to push it forward too quickly and signing guys to big contracts or overpaying because it's like, well, we've got to have this kind of guy. We've got to have this point guard. We've got to have whoever, you know, now you're on the clock a little bit. Yeah. Sometimes it's a front office and ownership group, especially one that's been reluctant to spend in the first place, is looking at you going, all right, guys, better make the playoffs because you just spent $80 million of my money on this one guy. So it's a tricky thing there. And I think the sense I got, at least again, from this one rival executive was, you know, probably more short term, more around the margins moves this summer, see what else they come into in free agency and draft, et cetera. And then maybe this time next year, maybe is the time that they start to really maybe push more chips in.
Yeah. And I tend to agree with that. Just my observation of how this front office has worked under Jeff Weltman, you know, at some point they're going to make the all-in move, but they've been extremely patient and they've preached and openly said, we'll be open to opportunities, but we're not going to, you know, try to rush this thing. We're not going to try and cut corners. And, you know, I think this is a team, like, to me, depth is the big thing. You know, injuries have just destroyed this team over the last 3 years, really. They started 5-20 essentially because they played the first quarter of the season without any point guards, with Marco Fultz and Cole Anthony being hurt. They have enough young guys, and I think this team, you know, I'll push back a little bit. I do think Marco Fultz is a pretty solid point guard, but obviously he still has some limitations because he's just not a shooter. And so, you know, I think when it comes to this team, they have a lot of really good young players that I think can take the leap up. But I think, like, a Markelle Fultz, even a Wendell Carter, who I really like. I want to see Wendell Carter in the playoffs more than anyone else, just because I worry about a non-rim protecting big and how effective that can be in the postseason. And I do think, like, right now the Magic are happy to kind of let, you know, Wendell, like, I say this to people, like, oh, the Magic should go after a center somewhere. I'd be like, you know, I have concerns about Wendell Carter, but that's not the most immediate need. That's something they can address, you know, next summer, 2 years down the road, when they know what they're missing when they get into the postseason, when they get into the playoffs. You know, I think that, you know, I'll ask you what you think the Magic's biggest need, if they're going to, you know, I agree. I think they'll focus a little bit more on the margins, adding some depth, maybe finding a solid starting shooting guard to compete with Gary Harris and Jalen Suggs. But shooting, I think, is obviously the biggest need and the most immediate thing for this Magic team to fill. You know, they have the draft. They have a couple. Yeah, they certainly should have a couple options in the draft. But what is, you know, if the Magic can work on the margins, what is the biggest thing that they should be thinking of addressing, assuming that, you know, they're fine with Markelle Fultz and Wendell Carter where they're at right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're okay with Wendell Carter and Markelle Fultz, and I like Carter, but, like, let's talk about point guard again for a second. Yeah. Fultz and Cole Anthony are perfectly fine. I think the view around the league is that they're both backups. I think the view is that they don't have a starting caliber point guard. One thing that again, this one executive I was chatting with mentioned to me about the Magic is that one reason they wouldn't go all in on a point guard, aside from, you know, obviously, like I said, the spending issues and expectations and all that stuff, and are you ready to actually to make, you know, major investment if your youth is not quite ready to win yet anyway, is that they also like Suggs as a guy who's going to handle the ball a lot. Not that he's a point guard, but just that he's another guy who's going to need the ball in his hands some, and that maybe they want to invest more time and reps in that before they decide, okay, the need is a point guard. But if I'm looking, look, timing is everything, and maybe the time is wrong to do this. But I believe that good young players, non-point guards, right? Forwards, you know, Wagner, Banchero types, you will evolve more rapidly, or you will have a better, easier evolution in your early years in the NBA if you've got a strong veteran playmaker with you. And that's actually even the case for veteran scorers sometimes. I'm in New York. I was covering the Knicks during the Carmelo Anthony era, and Carmelo was at his best when he had either Chauncey Billups or Jason Kidd, veteran point guards who were really smart, who could control the offense and who could get Carmelo his best attempts and also reel him back when he was overdoing it. And scorers tend to do that sometimes. So if you want somebody to organize the offense and to get the best out of my God, I mean, there's a current New York version of this too. Julius Randle was kind of a mess a year ago. He's not great right now either in the playoffs, but he had a phenomenal bounce back regular season in large part because Jalen Brunson came in as and again, Jalen Brunson, second round pick, backup, you know, a secondary ball handler in Dallas, not a primary, but you see that a guy who's really smart about the game and understands how to run an offense and get guys in their best spots and has some leadership skills, like what that did. Like, imagine what a Jalen Brunson or like say a Fred VanVleet, who's a free agent probably this summer, could do for the Magic. And again, I'm not saying that this is the time to do it. And I'm not saying that they will, because as I say, the sense is that they're not, but I just think it makes it that much easier on your young evolving, you know, scorers when they've got somebody who can run the offense and make it all make sense. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with that. I think watching Markel every day, I do think Markel does some of that stuff, but he's also essentially playing his second full season or third, you know, second and a half full season in the league. He carries himself like a veteran, but I think understands the game really well, but you know, I watch him enough. He kind of trails off sometimes, like his focus, you know, kind of wanders, which I think you get with young players. And, you know, again, you're right. With the young players, you got to give them time to make mistakes and learn sometimes. But I think, you know, this Magic team, I think they were the second or third youngest team in the league. They're all children. They had only three total players on their roster older than 30. I think they only had two players total on the roster older than 30. And that was Terrence Ross and Michael Carter-Williams. Gary Harris is the veteran at like 28, 29 years old, something like that. I'm a big, I have my Horace Grant theory, which is a very Magic specific way of saying that 95 team was not going to make the finals despite all the talent they had without Horace Grant there to kind of show them the way, show them how to be a playoff team. And I agree with you. That's something this Magic team is missing. They're all really young. They all really like playing with each other. They all are really bought into what Jamal Mosley is preaching to them. And I think that's where they get a lot of their, get at least a lot of their poise and focus. But there's no substitute for someone on the floor, like getting in Paolo's ear and saying like, "Hey kid, you got to go," or "I'm going to get you the ball in the right spot." Like you said, you know, to your point, like, Luka Doncic struggled without Jalen Brunson too. Having a guy on the team that you can trust to run the team and get you the ball in the right spots consistently as a star, that's everything, and that's something that this Magic team is missing. Just to kind of close things off here, coaching is always kind of the lightning rod. You know, he's especially with young teams, fans are very, very quick to jump on coaching. But overall, you know, Jamal Mosley as a young coach, you know, dealing with a super young team, what do you make of the job that he's done in his first 2 years with Orlando? And for, you know, I'm a big believer that coaches also have to grow and develop the same way, especially young coaches have to grow and develop the same way that young players do. What's kind of the next evolution for him now as this team turns from, okay, we're just developing, we just want guys to get experience, to now like, okay, we're going to put a little bit of winning pressure on you guys. We want to meet, you know, the Magic, like Paolo Banchero said it as rookie of the year press conference, it's playoffs or bust for this team next year. Like, that's how the players feel about things. How does a coach manage that switch almost in a franchise's goals and organization?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because the coach is a little bit at the mercy of the organization and their timeline, right? If they don't go out and make big, bold moves this summer, his hands are tied. Like, he just has who he has, right? Like, he's not the one who can go tell them to go get a Jalen Brunson or a Fred VanVleet or whatever, right? You know, he's not the one who can tell them to do the now making the rounds rumor of Wendell Carter Jr. for DeAndre Ayton swap. Those are not his calls to make. He knows what he signed up for. Young coaches understand it. Most young coaches end up getting their first crack with a team that's in a position like the Magic are in, young and rebuilding, and you hope for the best, and you hope you get a lot of latitude, because not everybody does. But Jamal Mosley is really well regarded around the league. People really like him. You know, bright, works hard, good communicator, good demeanor, just really solid. Everything I can gather is that the players really like him and listen to him. And, you know, we spend a lot of time in this league, you know, fixating on coaches, on the details in a game where it's like, well, why did he make this substitution, or why didn't he put in that guy, or this out of timeout play? And you get into the granular nature of it, but so much of coaching in the NBA, you don't have to be the best X's and O's guy. But whatever it is you do, whatever your system is, whatever your philosophy is, you need buy-in. That's the phrase that you'll hear all the time, buy-in, right? That matters more. You could have the most simplistic system in the world, in the abstract, whatever that might be, the most complex system, the best system, however you want to rate coaches' approaches to the game, unless they buy in, it doesn't matter. And so that's the thing. And what the sense I get about Mosley is that's not a problem. That one he's got down. So that is so much such a huge percentage of the battle, is just making sure that everybody's on board, that they believe in you and in each other. And that if you keep telling them this is the way we're going to do it, and we might lose some games, but eventually this is going to work, or you got to work through it. So I think they're in great shape there. People are very high on him, like I said. And you know, the one thing that you hear sometimes is a concern for younger coaches, especially from people who I think like Jamal and believe in his future, is will he get enough time? Will they be patient enough? Because as I said at the start of this answer, he doesn't get to choose who is on the roster. That's not his responsibility or his choice. So will he be there long enough to get to see the fruition of all of this work now?
That's always the problem with young rebuilding teams. You know, you sometimes hire a guy knowing he's good for this situation, and you wonder if he's ready for the next. And I think, again, I agree. You got to give him, I'm a big believer, sometimes you got to give things a chance to fail. Like, especially in our culture today, everyone's so quick to rush to like a final judgment. And I'm just like, sometimes you got to give things a little bit of a chance to fail and mess up and see if they can recover and bounce back. And that's where the Magic are at. Howard, I really appreciate you jumping on and answering some questions and giving some kind of national perspective on this Magic team. Like you said, it'll probably be very, very different in a week, in a month, in a couple months. But I appreciate you. Everyone should know who you are, where to find you. But in case they don't, where's the best place for people to find you and interact with all your NBA musings?
Sure. Thanks. You can find me on Twitter at Howard Beck. You can find all my writing. For the moment, my current stuff is at GQ Sports, but you can go to my authory page, which is like author with a Y on the end, authory.com/Howard Beck. And everything I do for GQ and all my past stuff for Sports Illustrated and Bleacher Report, New York Times, is all there as well. I'm over at Blue Sky also, but not everybody's there yet. So
we're all migrating there slowly.
if you happen to have and I don't have any invites, sadly, to send out either. But if you're on Blue Sky, come track me down there too.
I appreciate it, Howard. Thanks for coming on the show today, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
I want to once again thank Howard for jumping on the podcast, talking a little Orlando Magic basketball here, even in the depths of the shallows of the offseason. I don't know what to call it, but at a point when the Magic are not super relevant. Obviously, we have the NBA draft lottery coming up in a week, so we will be back in the spotlight once again very, very soon. But I want to thank Howard once again for jumping on. Despite what he said, definitely check out his other appearances throughout the Locked On Podcast Network. Don't overkill it. I'll agree with that. But Howard's been giving us great insight throughout the Locked On Podcast Network, so definitely check it out today. I want to thank you all again for listening, though, to today's episode of Locked On Magic. Of course, find me on Twitter at @PhilipRR_OMD. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Himo, Google Play, Spotify, Odyssey, and all the fun places to download podcasts to your podcast-enabled listening device. For the latest on the Orlando Magic, be sure to check out OrlandoMagicDaily.com. We want to thank you again for listening to the podcast today. If you're one of my everyday subscribers, or you want to be one of my everyday subscribers, We're going to come back tomorrow and react to some of the things that Howard had to say, some of the takeaways, perhaps from the Nationals' perspective, that we don't see very, very close to the situation. We'll get to all that on tomorrow's episode of Locked On Magic. But until then, for Orlando Magic Daily and Locked On Magic, this has been Philip Rossmanreich. We'll see you all again next time for another episode of Locked On Magic.